Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, the last five, the most recent five, are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows, including the last five, are archived at the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thanks. Now let's get started. You know, this time we're going to talk about complacency. And I think, like we sometimes do, perhaps we should start out with deciding what complacency is, deciding on a definition. So what do you think we mean when we talk about complacency? And thank you, all of you, for being here. I see we have lots of participants. Thank you very much. And, you know, this is kind of interesting. I can see that there's going to be a difference of interpretation. Usually, when we have one of these start off with a definition questions, people are basically on the same, have the same idea. It's just that it's worded differently or it's expanded upon, but it's basically the same. But, you know, this time, complacency means different things to different people. How interesting. Yay. You know, I always say that these shows are organic. They grow from what people send in. And thank you for all of your participation. And they're not really scripted. And they're not written out in any way. So let's talk about this. We have some differing interpretations of what complacency is. Mm-hmm. Let's go with the, well, I'm going to call them kind of positive definitions first, in the sense that everything's going all right, type positive. Let's see, Andrea says the complacency is satisfaction with the way things are. Satisfaction with the way things are. We don't have to do anything because it's all right. We don't want to change anything. We're satisfied. We're complacent. We're satisfied with the way things are. Mm-hmm. And Ray says self-satisfaction with what you have done. That's pretty good, too. Satisfied with the way things are and self-satisfaction with what we have done, that we've done it already. We can sit back. Mm-hmm. As Joyce says, we've already achieved the desired goal. Creates complacency. We don't need to do anything. We've already achieved it. Mm-hmm. Jean says success is assured and needs nothing more. At least we think that success is assured. I'm never quite certain that I have the crystal ball that tells me that that's absolutely true. But it would make you be complacent, wouldn't it? If you were certain that it's going to come out fine, that success is assured, that we will reach our goal, we'll have a successful outcome. Mm-hmm. Don't need to do anything more. We've got it all in place. Uh-huh. As Diane says, what can be done has already been done. Complacency is when what can be done has already been done. Did it. Been there. Finished. We're just waiting for the to settle. Mm-hmm. Complacency. Those are kind of positive definitions, aren't they? That everything has been done and success is assured. And that you're satisfied. You've got self-satisfaction. You're satisfied with the way things came out. And certain that that's it. And we don't have to meet anymore. Don't have to worry about it. Already done. Mm-hmm. Now, we've got agreement on that. And thank you very much for all of your participation. And we've got some people that don't have quite as, well, as positive a view, not as such a self-assurance view. And it's interesting because this is a really good, they're really good ideas of what complacency is also, because really complacency is inaction, right? You can't, you're not doing anything because, as Diane says, what can be done has already been done. Mm-hmm. And Kevin says that a complacent, and a lot of people agreeing, yes, thank you very much for your participation. Kevin and others are saying that complacency is when you cannot affect the outcome, so you're no longer trying. That's rather a different idea than I'm satisfied with the way things are and the outcome is assured that it's going to be successful. Yeah, that makes inaction. But you can have complacency when you cannot affect the outcome, so you're no longer trying. You're just kind of giving up, become complacent. Just accepted it, accepted the inadequacy in some way, because you've convinced that you cannot affect the outcome, so you're no longer trying. Mm-hmm. As Safiva says, that nothing can be done, so you accept reality. Nothing can be done, so accept reality. And Celeste says the complacency is when you have no power, and therefore you must accept what is being done. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Thank you for all of your participation. We're getting a lot of agreement that complacency is actually caused by at least the impression that the outcome is assured, even if it's not the one you had wanted, that you can just accept it. Let's see, accept it because you have no power. A lot of people using the word power, that you become complacent because that's just the way it is. You have no power to change it, that you lack the responsibility. Mm-hmm. Or you want to have the responsibility be put on someone else. Mm-hmm. You don't wish to act. The person, well, we always wish to act, don't we? But the participants don't wish to act. They want the responsibility to be on someone else because, well, because perhaps it's hard. Or perhaps they're kind of convinced that it won't work. You're looking to shift the responsibility so you become complacent and refuse to participate. Mm-hmm. I've got quite a few people saying that you need the issues need influence. You need to have some sort of insider influence or political influence, and you become complacent because you don't have that, and you need it in order to get the group heard. Mm-hmm. Your voice is being heard, not being heard. This is interesting. You can become complacent because you're not in the majority. Mm-hmm. Well, it's a good point. Sometimes that happens, culturally especially. You're not in the majority. So you become complacent and accept the situation. Mm-hmm. You know, we're getting a lot of people talking about the media. Isn't that interesting? It wasn't exactly what I had envisioned, but when I gave the title for the show. But, you know, I always say I learned something from these shows, and I hope you do too. And a lot of people are talking about media creating complacency in the citizenship, in the listeners, in the viewers. Mm-hmm. Lots of media creating complacency. Well, let's think about that. Do we think that's true? That complacency is kind of third party created because of our perception of the situation. What do you think of that? Does the media create complacency? Or maybe the other way around, can also create enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. Michelle says that the media creates a culture of complacency by depicting events and opinions as facts. Now, that's a very interesting thought. The media creates a culture of complacency by depicting events and opinions as facts. Interesting point. You know, you ever see one of those ads, and people are bringing this up, and thank you for all of your participation, where it's a picture, and then you have two side-by-side pictures showing the same event just to show the difference. You know, they say the pictures don't lie, but pictures influence what you think, don't they? Because you can have two pictures of the same event taken from a different angle or with a different caption, and they'll have an entirely different interpretation. And that's really true. People are saying that they've seen the little studies and things where people interpret what the picture means depending on how it is, how it's composed. Yeah. The media creates a culture of complacency by depicting events and opinions as facts. You got to think about that when you listen to the media, don't you? And yes, it's a very good point that we may think about it because we are very intelligent and very interested. But the majority of our participants, the majority of the public, will not think about it. And if presented correctly or presented in a correctly marketing type theory, that facts are not necessarily facts if they are of opinions or events. They're someone's interpretation of the facts. Interesting thought. Yes. Thank you for all of your participation. Let's see. Arshia says that the media creates mass feeling of inability to change. The media can create a mass feeling of inability to change. This is how it is. This is how the world is. This is how it should be, stated as a fact. Mass feeling of inability to change. Well, if that's a fact, and if everybody thinks so, because the media always says that everybody thinks so, right? They at least imply it. Then perhaps we can't do anything about it, and we become complacent. Interesting. Kiyoshi says the media creates a dependency on the newsmakers to advise what to do. Dependency on the newsmakers to advise what to do. Well, that's why politicians use the media, don't they? And organizations and advertisers. Thank you. Yes. Dependency on the newsmakers to advise what to do. We actually become, well, they become our leaders, don't they? And sometimes they are our leaders. Sometimes they're politicians. Sometimes they are elected leaders. And, of course, this is a global show. And thank you for all of your participation. But all across the world, we get our leaders in certain ways. And our newsmakers often do create an opinion about the news, about what they're saying. Randy's making an interesting point, and several other people have too, that the media shows horrible situations so you feel grateful for your own situation. You know, I didn't think about that, but yes, that's a type of steering, a type of marketing, a type of presentation that makes the citizenry feel complacent about their place in the world because they see the horrible situations elsewhere and they're grateful that they're not in that horrible situation. Yeah, makes you grateful for it. Is gratitude complacency? Yeah, I think it is. People are wondering if that's a synonymous term. I think satisfaction sometimes is. Become complacent because you're satisfied. Complacent because you're afraid. That's a good point. Afraid to speak out. Afraid to object. Afraid to stand alone. Afraid to promote an unpopular view. Sometimes complacency is caused not by satisfaction, but by fear. I don't want to be the one that speaks out. I don't want to be the one that takes responsibility. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lydia and others are making a good point. I'm in the United States, and this is, of course, a global show, but I think it's even true just on, like, the United States media and like that, and probably even more true in certain areas, that the news is filtered by authorities to encourage citizen complacency. Lydia points out the news is filtered by authorities to encourage citizen complacency. We'll tell you what we want you to know in a way that indicates to you what it is that you should think. Now, have you arrived at your opinions all by yourself? Well, yes, but your opinions are based on what you perceive to be the facts, what you've been told, what's been presented to you. Mm-hmm. And that does make a difference, doesn't it? That the news is filtered. I think there's a certain amount of, this is being pointed out too. Even if you live in an area where the news is not deliberately filtered, and I know that some of you do live in areas where, for example, the authorities deliberately filter what you can see and hear. Even if you don't, the news is a business, right? Basically everywhere. They get paid, they sell ad space and things. Even the internet-type news is a business. They've got ads, they've got advertisers. And there's a certain amount of self-filtering just inherent because they want people to turn on their channel, to look at their website, to do their thing. So they want to make it interesting to the people. And sometimes things are not so interesting. So there's some self-filtering. Mm-hmm. Yeah. See, Michael says, spectacular entices viewers. What individuals are doing often is a dull process of negotiation and not exciting. Spectacular entices viewers. Well, it's much more interesting. It's not something you see every day, right? The spectacular entices viewers. The more weird, the more bloody, the more horrid in some way, probably the more viewers, right? And what individuals are doing often is a dull process of negotiation. Well, it doesn't make great TV now, does it? Because we sit around a room and we talk and we negotiate and we reach reasonable conclusions. And you know what? I just had a video done of myself teaching a seminar. Someone asked me to do it as a promo for university. And so I had the opportunity to look at it. And it's a half hour's worth of footage. Well, when it's put together, it's a half hour's worth of footage. And it's very good. It's very clear. It's very interesting. But you know, it doesn't make great news. It's kind of dull to see even someone fairly animated like I am go up and back in the room and talk and reason and lead the conversation and teach negotiation tactics. Well, yeah, it's kind of a dull process, and the spectacular entices viewers. The spectacular. Well, it does screw the news. It skews the news, though, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. So, now we've decided what complacency is. Got kind of two camps on that. And now we understand that the media affects how we think and talk. It affects complacency, right? It either creates it, it makes us feel that we're doing pretty darn good, or it stirs it up. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, you know, this is, of course, a practical show. So we're always interested in the practicalities of, now that we've defined it, now that we've talked about it, what are we going to do about it? how can we prevent complacency from settling in, from really being intrusive and preventing us from going forward because people just don't care anymore, or they figure someone else is doing it, or it's just the process is awfully long. You know, how can we prevent people from becoming complacent? Connor says that you can present both sides to the media so that it's argued in the media and not just one side. And yeah, I've seen this. I've actually done it a few times. Several people are saying, Connor and others, that you can stage an informational protest. Stage an informational protest. Well, I'm going to say the famous words that you guys all say that I say, and thank you for very much for your participation. I'm going to say it depends, right? Because you might stage a protest, it will get you somewhere. If it'll get you media attention, if it'll gain you sympathy. You know, sometimes there's a protest in the United States, not so much anymore because it's very ineffective, but for a while there, people were clogging the streets at rush hour to make their point, to protest, not a traffic thing. They weren't protesting something about the infrastructure. They were protesting something about, and in those days, it was immigration reform, I think. Pardon me. And so what they did was they came kind of en masse and blocked the streets at rush hour. I live in Seattle and in D.C., and they're both very big rush hours and big streets that you can block. And I got to tell you, staging that media protest, it got media play, but it wasn't favorable because people were mad. They didn't want you to keep them from getting home, even if they were sympathetic to your cause. So you got to be careful when you stage a protest. Mm-hmm. You know, Honoria and others are saying, mentioning something that's very, very true, and thank you for all of your participation. So far in our discussion, we have acted as though the media is an old-fashioned thing. It is television, it is radio, it is print, and like that. But of course that's not true. Even I have not looked at a print newspaper in a really long time. You can see them on your computer at your leisure, and you don't have to carry around paper, and you don't have to mess with it. So, yeah, so it's not television and radio and like that. The internet is very, very important. And in order to prevent complacency, especially if you need some sort of public, I won't say approval, but public interest in your cause, in what you're doing, it's very, very important to have a social media and an internet campaign. People look, people watch that. The media is, of course, the internet nowadays and blogs and everything else. And it's important to have a favorable report, so to speak, because just as we discussed, if you respect whoever it is that's running the blog or the social media site and they say you're okay, it'll go a far distance with their followers who will then think about your cause and go, wait a minute, that might be interesting. You see, you'll get help. So you should waste, as Honoria and others are saying, you should have a social media and internet campaign. That's what most people are nowadays. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people, Gary and others, are saying that in order to prevent complacency, in order to prevent the process from kind of bogging down, you need to recommend a specific plan of action. We want to know if we work and if we put in the time, because, you know, time is a very precious commodity, and a lot of times we're dealing with volunteers, people who are passionate about something, but they need to have a goal, a specific plan of action, because if not, the process will drag forever, and then complacency really will set in. People go, oh, well, it's not that bad. We'll just live with it. You know, that kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. Sheila and others are saying that you fully discuss all options with the group and discuss the need for change. Change always gets everybody's attention, right? Mm-hmm. Fully discuss all options and the need for change. Well, you're not complacent anymore, are you? You're having to think about what you want and what is right and the impact. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Discuss all options and the need for change. Paul and others are saying a thank you for all of your participation. That enthusiasm is contagious. Yeah, if the leader has remained enthusiastic, it'll help a lot. If the leader is really getting complacent or bored or whatever and is fidgeting around and looking at his or her watch and sighing really loud and like that, well, that's contagious too. Mm-hmm. So, enthusiasm is contagious, according to Paul. Mm-hmm. You have the presentations of ideas and visions of the future. Each time, perhaps, say what you think is going to happen in the future. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. And it's interesting to hear what other people say. Because then you have an idea of how they're thinking about the situation. Mm-hmm. They may not be complacent at all. They may just feel powerless. There is rather, you know, it looks the same, but it's not. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, Noel and others are saying you need to keep the negotiation process moving forward to prevent lethargy. And, you know, that does indeed happen. People get tired. And things happen. Life intercedes. Because when they started 8 months ago, they had the time and the enthusiasm. But now the process is dragging. Oh, that's no good. And they're losing steam. They're losing enthusiasm, right? Yeah. So keep the process moving forward to prevent lethargy. I see people actually kind of lie down on a piece of furniture and close their eyes. They're not thinking. They become lethargic, and they're getting complacent about the whole thing. Suki and others are saying that you need to create a team spirit so that individuals cannot become complacent. Create a team spirit so that individuals cannot become complacent. Yeah, well, we're all counting on you. We're counting on each other. You can't just not produce. You can't say, well, I think we've done it. I'm going to back off. Mm-mm. There's no complacency in a team because people are depending on you. Very good point. Create team spirit so individuals cannot become complacent. Mm-hmm. Part of a team. How'd you like it if your other team members became complacent? We wouldn't have much of a team now, would we? Mm-hmm. And Matthew and others are saying that what happens is that you're really bonding as a group with a specific and clearly stated common goal. You know, the bonding of a group as a group idea is very important, but a specifically and clearly stated common goal will go a real long way towards not having complacency and keeping enthusiasm. What are we doing here? Why are we here? That's an important question that everybody needs to know the answer to. Because if you know the answer to something like that, then you'll be certain that nobody will become complacent. And we'll get the process going. That's important, too. It sometimes things drag. And remember, we don't meet just for the sake of meeting. We meet when we have a purpose. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I can see that we've gotten to the recipe for peace now, the recipe part. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons, and people are saying, thank you for all of your participation. Quite a few people are saying that you create the teamwork during the timeouts, during the, it's an overused word, but it really is, during the networking period, when we're all talking to each other and it's somewhat informal. And that's how team spirit, how team enthusiasm is kept up. And really, at Recipe for Peace now, of course, we advocate having food, not because we are hungry necessarily. I mean, it might be dinner time, but maybe not. But because the food is a tool to keep us talking to each other, to keep us enthusiastic, to keep pushing the agenda forward, so that we could reach our goal and be successful. Yes, it gives us a pleasant, convivial atmosphere to work in. What could be better? Now, I'm now going to say what I always say, and I know that a lot of you are returned people, and thank you very, very much, but there's a lot of new people too, and it bears repeating. When you're going to have food with a group of people, you need to take a survey amongst them. You need to ask if anybody has a food allergy, a dietary restriction, or a dietary religious prohibition, a cultural prohibition. And you need to respect that, because you don't want anybody to have a bad time. You want to pass this information along to everyone so that we don't have an accident, so that nobody has a bad time. Right. And also, I think that everyone, when they bring something, it needs to be labeled. Not what's it called, meatloaf. No. It needs to have a list of what's in it, so that if I have some prohibitions, I can read the list and know if I can eat it. It goes to having a good party, so to speak. Yeah, you need to tell what's in your dishes. Mm-hmm. I also think that as leader, I suppose this is because I hate running out of food, I think that the leader should have some extra food. And at least one of the extra dishes should be a safe recipe. Now, what's a safe recipe? Well, it's you've taken the survey about food prohibitions, right, and allergies and religious and cultural prohibitions, and we judged that the dish is edible by everybody, mm-hmm. Although we're still going to label it, right, say what's in it, and it is something that your people, because your people are different than mine, I may be this is a global show, I may be in a completely different area, but your people would be familiar, your participants would be familiar with the ingredients and have eaten them in the past. Mm-hmm. So let's do a nice, safe recipe. This one's going to be a vegetable stir fry. And yes, it is vegetarian. It is delicious. And those of you who have been here before, welcome back. And those of you who this is your first try, come again, please. Hello. By the way, I'm going to digress for 1 second and tell you that if you want to hear prior shows, and you want me to hear me say about the dietary restrictions, if you want to hear prior shows, the last five, the most recent five, are on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows, including the last five, are on the radio station's website at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. So, we're talking about a safe recipe. This time we're going to have a vegetable stir fry. Very, very nice. You can gussy it up with some sort of chicken. If you're going to use shrimp, for sure, make sure everybody can eat it. And leave big enough pieces so that everyone can see it. But this is just the basic vegetable stir fry. And I do think that if you have the facilities, it's always interesting to make a stir fry with the group, so to speak. Yeah, people say it's not making it with the group. It's like just showing the group. And I suppose that's true because I don't like to give anybody kitchen tools and messiness and sharp knives. No, but really it's the messiness and the your inability to know if anybody has any talent in the cooking direction. So you come on a stir fry, you come with everything already chopped up. It's so that you can put it in the, well, I actually have a wok, but I'll do in a big skillet. You can put it all together and assemble it and cook it while everybody's there because it smells wonderful. It gives you something to talk about that's fun, and then you all get to eat it hot. It's just delicious. Okay, so that's my pitch for if you have a stove in your facility, to use it. And it smells really nice, too. Vegetable stir fry. Here we go. Let's have a tablespoon of oil, 2 cloves of garlic. I like to use a lot of garlic. If you think that's too much, cut it back. Let's slice them real thin. You don't want to slice them. It's too hard and like that. Give them a small chop. You know, chop them into small pieces. Yeah. Let's have a nice piece of fresh ginger that we're going to peel and we're going to grate. I'm making the motion with my hand like you can actually see it. Hello. You're going to just grate it or shred it or make it into small mints. It's what, about a scant tablespoon when you get all done with it. Like an inch of fresh ginger. Mm-hmm. Now let's have about a pound of broccoli, because that's a lovely stir-fry vegetable, and just the tops. I must confess that where I am, it is easy to get frozen, and you can buy frozen actually cut up into little top pieces, and you won't have to discard the stems, and you won't have to decide if you're going to slice the stems really, really, really thin and add them in. I tend to do that, but that's just me, because I don't like to waste. But anyway, about a pound of broccoli, if you're going to use the frozen, and let's face it, I certainly am, just from a convenience and a storage and an expense standpoint, you need to thaw it and pat it dry. Always thaw everything, otherwise you're going to get different temperatures, and you're going to get water in the stir fry. So thaw them, pat them dry, about a pound. They come, around here they come in a 16-ounce package, so that's how we get the pound. Let's give it half a cup of water. We don't need much water. If you can see that you need more water because it's not covering and like that, add it. But we'll start with half a cup and work our way up. We can't not have carrots, right? How about 4 nice big carrots that we're going to peel and slice up nice and thin so that make little discs. Make them nice and thin so that they cook really fast, right? Yeah. Let's have a nice red pepper that we're going to seed and core and cut into cubes, like a medium dice. Just make little squares. Mm-hmm. We're going to do the same with the green pepper. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the red pepper and the green pepper go real nice together. And we're going to have a nice big onion. We're going to dice up. Mm-hmm. Let's give it 2 tablespoons of soy sauce. Remember, when you use soy sauce, you don't need to add salt because it's already salty. A couple tablespoons of that. And there we have it. That is our ingredient list. So we're going to take a nice big skillet. A wok, if you've got it. I actually have a wok just because it's pretty, and I do it a lot when I'm standing there, right? We discussed how nice it is if you have the facilities. So we're going to take our oil and heat it in our wok or whatever we've got. We're going to add the garlic and the ginger, and we're going to stir fry it for, what, a minute. It doesn't take very, very long at all. And already we've got very fragrant in the room. Mmm, delicious. Everybody comes around to see what on earth smells that good. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to add the broccoli. And of course, it's all thawed and everything, so it's going to take us another minute. Mm-hmm. And if you've got raw broccoli, let's see, is the frozen raw? Not really, usually. But if you've got really hard broccoli, is what I'm telling you, you need to add more water, because we're going to add a little bit of water now, just the half cup of water. But you might need a whole cup if you've got hard raw broccoli, because you need to cook the sucker. You need to cook the thing for, what, about 3-4 minutes. Boil it to make it soft, right? And so we've done the broccoli. And now we're going to add the carrots and the peppers. And we're going to stir fry it until we don't have any more liquid. In fact, did I say to add the soy sauce into the water? I like to do it that way. You don't have to. Well, there's kind of a difference of opinion. It's a little more tasty, I guess, to add it later. Let's add it later. Okay, so we've got everything boiled down. The liquid is evaporated. This will take about 5 minutes because you've got a really hot wok, right? And you didn't add too much. Now we're going to add the onion and some mushrooms might be nice in here there too. Let's have 1/2 pound of mushrooms sliced up. And the soy sauce. And stir fry it until everything, the liquid's evaporated and everything's soft and yummy, which is why we have cut the carrots. And the peppers very small, right? Right, yes. You stir fry the whole thing. Soy sauce really at the very last, and you stir it all around. You need to be kind of drizzly with the soy sauce, because otherwise you get a clump of saltiness. Mm-hmm. Stir fry it all around. Smells wonderful. Remember, it's got the garlic and the onion and like that in there. It's delicious. It is, people are saying it's healthy. This is true, too. And it is vegetarian. And generally speaking, people are not allergic to any of the ingredients. Although you never know about soy sauce, it has to be promoted, that has to be told that it's in there. So that is our safe recipe. And, of course, you might like some rice to the side, the rice for underneath it. Big rice cooker. I actually have a rice cooker, but a big pot, a big bowl of rice, whatever kind you like. Yeah. So, safe recipe. And condiments. People asking about making it more spicy, of course, if you like. I tend to make things more bland and leave lots of condiments out in their original packaging so that people can judge whether or not they would like jalapenos on this. Yeah. So, now we're going to have our adventure recipe. What makes this an adventure recipe? Well, it's got ham. It's got sausage. A lot of people do not eat those two items because they are pork, essentially speaking, because of dietary restrictions, religious restrictions, maybe even allergies. Yeah. So the next one is going to be a ham and sausage loaf, in the sense that meatloaf is a loaf, kind of loaf-shaped. Mm-hmm. In fact, this is kind of like a meatloaf, except it is ham, so it is pinkish, and it's really quite delicious. People like it lots. Mm-hmm. It is our adventure recipe, of course, because of the pork. So let's have 2 cups of breadcrumbs. In my area, in the United States, it is easy to come by breadcrumbs that are finely breadcrumbed. Well, they're small breadcrumbs. I was going to say chopped, but that's not really true. But they come, they're like sand. They're small, and that's very nice for cooking with. And so 2 cups of that kind of a breadcrumb. Also around here, and I know this is a global show, but I think this is true in a lot of places all over the world, breadcrumbs not only come in a container, so you don't have to make them, but they come flavored. I personally favor the Italian flavoring. You can do as you please. So, 2 cups of breadcrumbs, making your own, to toast and to use a rolling pin on them. 2 cups of breadcrumbs, 2 eggs that we're going to beat up. Let's have 3/4 of a cup, like 6 ounces of sour cream. Yes, the real kind. No, you cannot substitute the fake low-fat kind. And you know how it has liquid, the kind that comes to the top. Is that whey, W-H-E-Y? Yeah, people are not sure. But you know how it's got liquid? Don't stir it in. Throw it out because you want it as thick as possible. Let's have a chopped onion. A little bit of lemon juice just to keep the color bright. a teaspoon of mustard. I like the ground mustard, kind of the spicier one. And a teaspoon of fresh ginger, ground ginger. What do we just call it? Microplaned. Yes, the kind that is shredded. Yeah. And let's have a pound of cooked ham that we're going to grind up. And a pound of pork sausage that we're also going to... If it comes in a casing, like a plasticky type, non-edible-ish casing, take it out of there. We want just the pork sausage part, not the tough outsides. You may end up grinding this yourself because we can't really get ground cooked ham around here. At least I can't. And yeah, this is a great recipe for leftovers. Yes, you can use it for turkey. Be certain that if you're using leftovers, that you haven't saved them too long. I'm a little bit suspicious of leftovers. You have to be careful that you're not going to poison anybody. It'll make for a bad party. Yes, it'll make for a bad get-together. But yes, you could certainly use leftovers, as I often do, and grind them up. If you mince them with a knife, try to see if you can grind them, because otherwise the consistency is going to be funny and I think the loaf is going to fall apart. So a pound of cooked ham and a pound of sausage, pork sausage, nice serious pork sausage that you take the casings off of, grind them together because it mixes together really nicely that way. Okay, so we're going to actually combine everything, basically speaking. We're going to combine the crumbs and the eggs and the sour cream and the onion and the lemon juice and the mustard and the ginger, kind of combine them all around, and the meat. To tell you the truth, I put the ground ham and sausages in the bottom of a big, big pot. I throw everything else in, and then I squish it all the way through with my hands. There's nothing wrong with it. I mean, you're going to wash your hands. And so you've got it all incorporated real nice. The breadcrumbs don't look like they've got streaks of breadcrumbs in there. Everything's incorporated really nice. We're going to make ourselves a rectangle. And a loaf. One of those nice shallow loaf pan type things, a baking pan. You don't have a loaf pan, just make a loaf out of it, make a rectangle. And we're going to bake it for about 350 for an hour. You'll know because it's turned brown on the outside. You'll know that it's all cooked. It's all nice and lightly browned. If you're going to use a meat thermometer, it reads 160-ish. Quite frankly, everything was cooked. The idea is that it needs to be browned and cooked through. And also, when you take it out, or you can cook it first and then bring it, or if you're cooking it in the room, depending on if you have the facilities, before you actually invert the pan, before you take it out so that you can cut it into slices, let it stand, let it rest for a little while, because otherwise it will crumble. And letting it stand there will make it more solid. You want to be able to make slices out of it. Yes. And so that is our adventure recipe. And yes, people ask if you can use meat. Well, of course. In fact, if you use just meat, that probably makes it less of an adventure. If you're actually asking my advice about what to use, if I don't have ham or turkey or something that I want to mix in with the sausage because sausage makes it yummy and gives it some flavor and some fat to it. If I don't have one of those and I'm using just meat, I personally like to use half chuck, which is kind of a more fat running through it, and it's very inexpensive. I like to use half chuck and half ground pork. Around here, pork is ground like hamburger meat. You can buy it in packages. If you don't want to do that, you can certainly use the sausage and ground meat also. Mix them all together. The trick is I like to throw the whole thing through a grinder so that both the ham and the sausage, or the whatever it is, the chicken, the turkey, the whatever it is you're using, and the sausage, I like to grind them together because then it makes a better consistency. And it's kind of disappointing if it doesn't slice and kind of falls apart. It's still delicious, but, you know, we eat with our eyes, right? And it's not quite as visually appealing. If when you go to cut it, it kind of crumbles. Mm-hmm. So you cook it for about an hour at 350. You'll look at it. You'll see that it's nice and browned, delicious. And, of course, you might even want to have the vegetable stir-fry with it. That would be yummy. That vegetable stir-fry could be the side, to be the vegetable. Mm-hmm. So there we have it. That is our adventure recipe. And I see that our time together is nearly up. My goodness, that went fast. Thank you very much for all of your participation. Thank you for not being complacent, for listening and for thinking and for working towards making the world a better place. Wonderful. Thank you very, very much. Thank you for listening. Thank you for coming. If you would like to contact us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website is recipeforpeacenow.com. If you would like to hear the prior shows, the last five, the most recent five, are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows, including the last five, are archived at the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. I hope you learned something. I always learn something from these shows, and I hope that you did too. They're rather organic, and they come from your questions. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. Lovely. Thank you for coming. Please do come again. And we'll see you next week. Thanks. Bye-bye.